Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Friday, June 3rd, 2016. With me today, I have Dave Hamilton. How are you, Dave?
I'm awesome. Thanks for having me, Jeff.
It's great to have you here. And Brian Chaffin, how are you?
Somewhat south of awesome, but still pretty good.
You know what? I hear just slightly south of awesome, the view is still really nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, hey, it's great to have both of you here. And friendly reminder for everyone that's going to be around Denver next week on June 8th, I will be at Mac Tech Pro in Denver, and I'm going to talk about home automation and smart home stuff. And there'll be a lot of other really awesome people there talking about a lot of cool stuff for consultants and IT people. Come and hang out. I'm going to put a link in the show notes so you can get $200 off, because I just want to hang out with you that much. And we also have some cool topics today. And first up, Brian, we were talking before the show about how Apple, or people have the impression that Apple is complicated. Maybe it's not the Apple they want anymore. And we get people saying, well, if Steve Jobs were alive, I'd like to dive back into that, because you have a different idea of what Apple would be if Steve was here.
I don't know if I'd say a different idea. Here's what happens when visionaries set out a message. People tend to gravitate. The rest of us tend to gravitate towards those messages, right? Would everyone, the three of us, agree with that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And what it is easy for those of us who aren't necessarily big visionaries to forget is that those visionaries, particularly someone like Steve Jobs. Steve Jobs was the last person to actually stick with an idea, stick with the path. You know, he reinvented himself many times. He reinvented his companies many times. And I think that we look at such a complex setup here. Apple has changed under Tim Cook. It has to change under Tim Cook from Steve Jobs, because they are two different people. Steve Jobs' clone would probably, be a different Apple. The thing is that Apple has become so large, it wouldn't shock me at all if Steve reinvented Apple again to deal with that size. You know, we all kind of want Apple to keep being the Apple that it was under Steve Jobs. Not only is that impossible, I don't even think Steve Jobs would do that. I guess that's the heart of the thought.
I agree. And I think the Steve Jobs Apple that people want to go back to is actually a romanticized version of what Apple was.
Totally.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a snapshot is what people want. The Apple that exists today is the Apple that Steve Jobs had, right? I mean, it is a company that is constantly evolving, that's constantly focused on delivering what they believe is the best thing for their customers, even if their customers don't necessarily believe it at the time, right? I mean, all of those things are still true about Apple today. Now, we could argue whether or not they're having success with those, and we could bring up examples where they are and where they aren't. But, you're right about this romanticization of it, if that's the right way to say that word.
It is now.
Yeah, because we can take a snapshot in time, and that will not change, because there is a static element to it, and that is that Steve Jobs has passed away, right? I mean, I'm a musician, and I hear this argument from a lot of people, like, somebody is playing something, and man, if only they would play it like Hendrix. It's like, man, if Hendrix had lived, he wouldn't play it like Hendrix either. But this is what happens when visionaries pass away is we have this convenience of remembering what they were doing at a certain period without anything beyond that to then say, well, of course it would have changed. I mean, the only reason they got to that point, the only reason Steve Jobs got himself and Apple to where Apple is because he was constantly reinventing things and had no allegiance to the past.
None,
and arguably no emotional attachment to the past, which, you know, is a whole other story to tell. But but I think that served him and served Apple and by proxy all of us in a variety of ways. So yeah, no, you it's
there's another element to this.
I agree.
So this snapshot idea, which is very insightful. The thing that bugs me is when people actually start trying to airbrush that snapshot.
That happens
of
a
course.
Lot.
Of
you know,
course.
Like I mean, for instance, the criticism that Apple has gotten for Apple not delivering, that Tim Cook has gotten for Apple not, you know, reinventing some new, brand new product category in the time that he's been CEO. And you can only call this a shortcoming of Tim Cook's if you ignore the long periods of time in which Apple under Steve didn't do that either. That's one of my particular pet peeves.
Yep.
And another interesting thing is so what started this conversation was a piece by is it Ken Segal or Segal? Do you think?
Yes,
with two excellent. L's. I think it's Segal.
It's probably Segal. I wonder if he's really... Anyway, so he noted, for instance, and he's talking about the death of simplicity at Apple. It's an excellent piece. You can put it in the show notes, Jeff?
Of course I am.
It's an excellent piece. One of the things he mentions is Apple's increasingly complex product line. The sheer number of Apple Watch configurations, the number of iPhone models that currently exist, the number of iPad models that currently exist. And this is much more complex than it used to be for Apple. But Ken notes that you can still put all of Apple's products on a table.
And oh, yeah, that's true.
Show me the company Apple size where you can do that.
Yeah. Well, that's true until they have a car.
Well, then they true. Just it need a bigger be, table.
Yeah, it's just a bigger table, yeah. But you can actually, though, you can put all of Apple's products inside the car.
In the car, that's right.
Yeah, that's true. Many of them in the glove box.
But now, here's one last point on this. I think that the interesting thing is that what we're seeing right now is Tim Cook reinventing Apple, just not just as Steve would have done it, but just like Steve would have done.
Okay, I had to parse through that in my head, but I totally get it. Yes, of course Steve would have reinvented Apple because that's what he did. And he didn't do it just once. But that doesn't mean that Tim would reinvent Apple in the same way that Steve did or would have.
He will not reinvent Apple. He could not. No one's going to be able to reinvent a company like Apple in the same way that anyone else would be able to be able to do it. But I think we're watching that happen right now. And I think that's one of the things that makes people uncomfortable, not to mention, of course, the side effects of having, like, you know, sloppier software, for instance. I think that's something that all three of us have spoken or written about on more than one occasion.
Sure. But the sloppy software thing that was happening under Tim or excuse me, Steve as well.
Yeah, I mean, iTunes and the cloud, parts of the cloud, were bad many times over under Steve. As there's no difference there, in fact.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm okay with Tim reinventing Apple with his vision as opposed to Steve's vision, which that's a bad way to say it because they do have a shared vision. But Tim has a different idea about how to execute that vision than Steve would have had. And I'm okay with that because if Tim or whoever comes after Tim was dead set on trying to do what Steve would do, I think that greatly limits and essentially hobbles their ability to effectively reinvent the company in a healthy and positive way.
Yeah, you know, insiders can be slaves to the perceived past of the visionary just as much as fans can be.
Oh, absolutely.
And I think that so far, Tim deserves just enormous amounts of credit for having been able to avoid that. I mean, you know, it would have been real easy. It would have been real easy for Apple. Do you remember the interview I did with John Sculley?
Yes. That was a great interview, by the way.
Well, thank you. Do you remember the bit where he talked about how he tried to stick with Steve's vision?
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's what non-visionaries do, with all due respect to John Sculley.
Right.
Right. And I think that Tim has not gone down that path is part of why Steve chose him, I believe. And that's another thing.
I think you're right.
It's something that Ken Segal points out in his piece, and it's something that we have talked about on multiple occasions. Do not forget that this person that you want to idolize picked this other guy that you want to demonize to be his successor, and he did
and knew exactly what he was picking. Yeah,
knew exactly right. What he was picking. Yeah, what? Why is it that everything else Steve Jobs did was so awesome, yet somehow he picked the wrong guy? It doesn't make any sense.
It's that airbrush snapshot, Brian.
Right. Yeah. Well, think about how people always went on about the way Steve Jobs has lost his touch and lost his vision, because we got things like the hockey puck mouse, or the Dalmatian iMac, or the cube. And, you know, there's just all these things along the way where people looked at the products and were like, really? Steve let this happen? He's lost his touch. But in retrospect, or excuse me, in hindsight, yeah, people are airbrushing over those things and focusing on the parts that they want to do. I think that's actually a natural human thing.
Okay, that said, Steve wouldn't have released the Apple Watch. not like this one. This would have been like, do you remember when he came back from the medical leave of absence and he threw a fit about the iPad and delayed it by at least 6 months?
Yes. Yeah, that would have happened here. We'd have seen the Apple Watch come out this year, not last year.
Yeah, exactly.
I think so.
Well, yeah. We don't know that. We may have seen it come out at the same time, but it would have been a different watch with whatever features, because Steve would have ridden people really, really hard in his special way to get them to create whatever it was that he was going to release at that point.
Yeah, and if you want to point, I think you might have just touched on what everyone who's complaining about this is not Steve Jobs Apple anymore is trying to say is exactly that, is that there is no visionary taskmaster at play here or at work here. That element is missing from Apple.
It is, and it kind of has to be, because Steve was kind of one of a kind.
One of a kind, yeah. It's lightning in a bottle.
Yeah,
you can't. Right, you can't expect it to be there, but that is what's missing from Apple. And also, it's a company that's no longer being run by one of its founders.
It's true, but you know, another issue is that Tim is wise enough. Again, right? Yeah. Tim is wise enough to know that he's not Steve Jobs. So
I know that.
Yeah. He relies on I have a really good point here.
Sorry.
He relies on people like Phil Schiller and Johnny Ive. Right? You know, Steve micromanaged Phil even when he was letting Phil do his thing.
Yeah, my guess is he micromanaged Johnny Ive in a way too.
Oh, no. He did more than that. When Johnny Ive came to him with the first device that was going to be the IMAX replacement, Steve sent him packing and told him to redo it.
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying is we're missing that person with those skills. I'm sure there's someone there saying not good enough, do it again, but it's not Steve Jobs.
Yeah, I doubt Steve would have put Johnny Ive in charge of software interfaces.
Right.
But, right. And because Johnny has made mistakes when it comes to things like software interface. Yeah. I.e. iTunes. And so I don't know. I had a point. It's gone.
So has Johnny really made mistakes with the iTunes interface, or does he have a plan we're not savvy to, where he's slowly transitioning us to the iTunes that hopefully will be better?
No, Johnny Ive is a one-of-a-kind person who was made one-of-a-kinder by Apple. I'm sorry, by Steve Jobs. Boy, that would have been so much better if I could have gotten it out right.
If you said it the right way the first time. But yes. You're right. Yeah. That's fair.
And the same thing is true with many of the other geniuses and amazing people at Apple. These people are just astounding people. Johnny Ive is an astounding individual, just an astounding individual. And he was made even better by Steve Jobs.
Yep.
Yep, I agree.
And again, that being lightning in a bottle, you can't have that anymore because Steve is gone and Tim is doing what Tim needs to do to make Apple be able to live without Steve Jobs. And that is an astounding task. And he has done an astoundingly good job of it.
Well, that's astounding, Brian.
It is. It certainly is. Hey, as much as I'd love to keep going with this topic, there's another thing that I want to talk about. And this is the news that just surfaced, that Apple hired Sunisa Durakovic last October. And for those of you that aren't up to speed yet on who he is, he was the chief navigation engineer for Harman International Industries. And that's the company that makes the in-car navigation systems that Audi, BMW, Mercedes-Benz, and several other companies use. So Apple brought this guy that has a lot of history. Like he started with Navigon, which became part of Garmin. So that was back in 94 when he started working there. He has like 20 years of history working with navigation systems and mapping and GPS. And he even has a patent for a mapping data system that helps prevent car collisions. And now he works for Apple. He moved from Germany to San Francisco to work for Apple. And people are talking about, oh, wow, this is going to be a big boost for maps. And I'm looking at this and I'm like, oh, wow. So Apple has a guy on staff that can design their Apple Car in-dash navigation system.
Filling an unspecified role at Apple, according to Bloomberg.
Right, yes. He's in an unspecified role. But I went ahead and specified one myself because who's going to stop me?
Well, I think you're right. I mean, it would be crazy for them to, you know, hire him to head up, you know, color choices for watch bands.
Yeah, well, yeah, but a lot of the coverage I've seen elsewhere on this talked about him coming to work on maps, and that doesn't make any sense to me. Seems like he's there to work on the Apple Car.
Right. Yeah, I think he's there for the Apple Car. And by extension, that would include CarPlay. But yeah, I think he's there for Apple Car. And I'm really interested to see what he does, especially because I think that he has probably been hobbled to a degree over the years because he's had to work on designing systems that meet a lowest common denominator. Because you have to make sure whatever the system is that you're designing that's going in multiple types of cars works in all of them. So lowest common denominator. And
you're
at Apple.
To his work at Harman.
Yeah. Yes, to his work at Harman. So now that he's at Apple, he's free to focus on one single platform, and this will be Apple Car.
And it could be Apple CarPlay.
Yes, absolutely.
Which can be is in cars that aren't manufactured by Apple.
That's true, but the way Apple's designed that, it's more of a thing where the cars tie into it as opposed to having to hit that lowest common denominator for all cars.
Right. That's right. Yeah. Yeah. No. It's this self-contained ish platform. Yeah.
Yeah, which I think is kind of exciting. So this, to me, looks like a hire that benefits Apple for their car project, but could also benefit other car makers because the stuff that he's working on could show up in CarPlay on other vehicles too.
Yeah, Apple's in the process of reinventing itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, how about that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think it's really interesting where this new Apple is headed.
I think it's fascinating that someone like this could be hired, and that it takes 7 months for the world to discover it, seeing as how closely watched, that Apple is probably the most closely watched company on the planet. That Apple was able to keep this to themselves for 7 months, that's amazing. Longer than that, it's 8 months, I guess.
It means someone at LinkedIn didn't build the right search engine.
Yeah, there you go, because that's how Bloomberg figured this out, I believe. They looked
someone wasn't doing the right searches.
Yeah,
one way or the other.
Well, there you go. So Brian, I'm glad you're on board with me, and Dave too, and that this is about Apple Car and not about maps.
Word.
Yeah, for sure. It's about maps and cars, whether it's Apple CarPlay or an Apple Car. I mean, and obviously,
I don't think it's about Apple Maps, the standalone project.
No, that'd be crazy.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, let's face it. Apple has basically lost that battle, right? I mean, if you're going to use maps as a standalone thing, Google is sort of the leader there. But baking it into cars and all of that, yeah, much better.
I find it interesting that you say Google's a leader there, because I have given up on Google Maps.
No, I know there's people in our ecosystem that have, but by and large...
But we do it because of the ecosystem.
Case. Right.
Well, I gave up on Google Maps because I got tired of having wrong information all the time. Apple Maps, surprisingly, gives me more accurate information more often than Google Maps. And it may just be the area that I'm in, because I know a lot of people.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. So, yeah, I get this. I deleted Waze off my iPhone because I got tired of it giving me wrong directions all the time. And I'm assuming it was getting its data from its own data and some from Google.
Right. Yeah.
But that's kind of a rat hole I'm taking us down, which I probably shouldn't do because we're out of time. So, Dave, thank you for being here today.
Thanks for having me. Fun stuff.
Yes. And Brian, thank you for being here.
Good times.
Yes, indeed. Listeners, thank you for being here. Have a great weekend. We will see everyone again on Monday.